to accommodate Palestinians displaced in the current Israeli war in Gaza. Some of the charges I'm facing, which include publishing false news, could land me a jail sentence. But I also want to go back to 10 years ago and even more when I was involved in covering cables revealed by WikiLeaks for this newsroom and for the previous newsroom I was working with. We so happened to have been some of the few publications that were involved in the cables coverage, especially cables addressing very local issues that would require contextualization as well as further reporting to explain their informational value in the moment they were revealed. In fact, some of the cables I covered involved Egypt's political management of the Sinai Peninsula, which has historically been the hoped-for site for the displacement of Palestinians of Gaza by Israel and its allies for years and years. To keep covering this issue and many others in Egypt today means to constantly hunt for leaks, depending on the willful treason of those who see the value of public interest and information hidden from them. In fact, on the sidelines of working on the WikiLeaks revealed by we learned that journalism is originally an act of treason, breaking open the closed doors of knowledge guarded by the clerics and their secularized political successors today. So WikiLeaks, in that sense, was a foundational moment for journalism. But that some of the leaks are cables coming from one of the most powerful political enterprises in the world, if not the most powerful, and that the price being paid for it are grave charges and endless prosecutions, are telling facts of the ultimate limits to our public right for information. These are the limits that won't be avoidable under democratic rule and liberal values triumphing the public right to know. These are the limits that power will always manage to push for, and these are the limits that would send those who challenge them to jail and assign them to ongoing pursuit. Today, and especially with the ongoing war next door, I feel that such references as freedom of expression, public interest, right to information, among other foundational references, can increasingly be parked aside as casualties of power. I'm not fooled that these references can be activated in their absolute meaning, or that they are enough to protect our practice as journalists or whistleblowers, or our rights as people by and large. But I'm increasingly alarmed by the ease of their erosion in this moment. As generative as crises tend to be, I also hope that this is a moment of reckoning, where new intellectual frameworks and political strategies can emerge to protect our right to share and receive crucial information, frameworks and strategies that can keep pushing the boundaries of knowledge and that can liberate Assange and all those divulging important secrets of power. Thank you very much.
Again, that's Lena Atala, co-founder and chief editor of Matamasser. As she talks about the significance of WikiLeaks for journalism and democracy today, she has also been fighting for the release of the Egyptian political prisoner Ala Abdel Fattah and many other political prisoners who are held in Egypt, which helps to explain the enormous pressure she is under right now. We turn now to the next witness at the Belmarsh Tribunal, Abby Martin, investigative journalist, host of The Empire Files, an independent documentary and interview series reporting on conflicts, repression, and the future of the First Amendment. She's been active as an editor and international journalist for more than a decade, published several books, and directed several movies, most recently, Gaza Fights for Freedom.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be on this panel and to be with all of you here today for this very important call to action. The past 8 weeks have been the deadliest on record for journalists, with 60 confirmed killed in Gaza so far. They are being targeted for assassination, many alongside their entire families. The reporters who remain say that their press vests, which should be their protective barrier from bombs and bullets, are actually what is marking them for murder. The genocide in Gaza has been exposed by these heroes. The only way the world knows the depth of crimes committed by the U.S. and Israel, things that would otherwise remain hidden for years, is because journalists are able to document them on their phones and instantly upload them for the world to see. The Iraqi people did not have the capacity to film their reality when a crime of this scale was being committed to them. They had no ability to break through the lies and propaganda disseminated by our so-called free press. Instead, it was whistleblowers like Sergeant Joe Darby who leaked the infamous Abu Ghraib torture photos, which dealt a major blow to the U.S. war effort. Imagine for one second if the Bush administration locked up the CBS reporter who dared to publish those. Mm-hmm. Iraqis didn't have social media, but they did have WikiLeaks, which finally showed the world what American forces had kept hidden for so long. Washington worked very hard to control where journalists could access and what they could and could not report. WikiLeaks was the antidote for that lack of free press during what was the greatest atrocity in the modern era. The Iraq war logs forced Americans to confront what the United States was doing in our names. They gave proof to Iraqi society the extent to which U.S. soldiers had been killing civilians. And the revelations made the occupation untenable. Chelsea Manning and Julian Assange helped end the Iraq war.
To our next witness, the legendary investigative reporter Mark Feldstein currently holds the Richard Eaton Chair of Broadcast Journalism at the University of Maryland, 20 years as an award-winning on-air investigative correspondent at outlets like CNN and ABC News.
Thank you. The prosecution of Julian Assange is unprecedented in American history. Publishing state secrets is not unprecedented. That's common. It's been going on thousands upon thousands of times since the 1790s. But never before has a publisher been thrown in prison for what he published. After September 11th, the government escalated prosecution of whistleblowers, the leakers, but never the journalists who published the information. That was seen as protected by the First Amendment and its clause protecting freedom of the press. This was known as the reporter-source divide. And so the Obama administration, which didn't like the leaks any more than other administrations, prosecuted Chelsea Manning for these leaks, but not Julian Assange because of the First Amendment. That changed under Donald Trump. His administration administered a new and dangerous legal theory using the espionage laws to imprison people for publishing true information about government abuses, Julian Assange. If you look at the indictment, it targets news gathering and publishing by itself as an act. 9 counts of what they call unauthorized disclosure of national defense information. That's publishing. 7 counts of unauthorized obtaining or receiving of this information. That's news gathering. In fact, they say, quote, that Assange, quote, explicitly solicited restricted material of political, diplomatic, or ethical significance precisely because of the value of that information. That's what journalists do. That's what all good journalists do. That's what I teach my journalism students to do. Even a top-level national security official from the Bush administration, Jack Goldsmith, said that this was obviously framed to mirror what journalists do. It's not an accident. This is an attempt to criminalize investigative reporting, to criminalize national security journalism. And Julian Assange is the perfect defendant from the government's standpoint because he's so unpopular. It's easier to convict him as a publisher than the publisher of the New York Times, which also published this information, even as it opens the door to doing just that. This case is about more than Julian Assange or journalism. It's about the right of the citizens to to get the information they need to participate in a democracy, to know what's being done by the government in our name with our tax dollars. It was a Republican congressman, Rand Paul, who said of this case, "In a free society, we are supposed to know the truth. In a society where truth becomes treason, we are all in trouble."
That was journalist Mark Feldstein, the chair of broadcast journalism at the Philip Merrill College of Journalism at the University of Maryland, speaking at the Belmarsh Tribunal. When we come back, we'll hear testimony from ACLU attorney Ben Wisner, who's the attorney for NSA whistleblower Ed Snowden. We'll also hear from the late Pentagon Papers whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg, who spoke at the first Belmarsh Tribunal. Back in a minute.
What else should I be? All apologies. What else should I say? Everyone is gay. What else could I write? I don't have the right. What else should I be?
Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In this special broadcast, we're airing excerpts of the Belmarsh Tribunal, which convened at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. in early December. I co-chaired the tribunal with Ryan Grimm of The Intercept. Our next witness at today's tribunal is Ben Wisner, lawyer, civil liberties advocate with the American Civil Liberties Union. Since July of 2013, he's been the lead attorney for NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden. He's also an adjunct professor at the New York University School of Law. Ben.
It's an honor to be a member of this tribunal. I want to do something a little bit different with my 4 or 5 minutes today. I want to speak to people who are not in this room and who would not be in this room, to people who would in fact disagree with what has been said and will be said today, to people who do not believe that WikiLeaks is one of the world's indispensable journalistic organizations, and who regard Julian Assange not as a journalist but as a chaos agent or worse, a hacker, to people who don't necessarily believe that American empire is the greatest threat to world peace, and who see America as largely a force for good in the world, to people who see no connection between the imprisonment of Julian Assange and the vital investigative journalism they read in America's leading newspapers, to people who think Julian Assange should probably be locked up for conduct wholly unrelated to the charges in this case, in short, to most Americans, including almost every member of Congress and almost everyone who holds power in this city. I want to say that if you think that what's happening to Julian Assange has nothing to do with you, that you have no skin in this game, you are wrong. The Washington Post recently, in recent years, unveiled a slogan, "Democracy dies in darkness." It's a little bit grandiose. They've been mocked a bit for it, but can anybody doubt its truth? No government in the world willingly divulges evidence of its own misconduct. Even in democracies, we might say especially in democracies where leaders have to face voters, people in power use every method at their disposal to conceal their misconduct, their scandals, and their crimes. Every important fact we know about our government's crimes, we know because the free press published the government's secrets. The single most important role of the press in a democracy is to dig out the government's secrets and to return them to their rightful owners, the public. This prosecution seeks to recharacterize that vital role as a criminal conspiracy. For the first time in our modern history, the government is describing the publication of truthful information as a felony. And if you think the government will do that once and then be satisfied, you're naive about how power works. The threat of prosecution will be in the air every time the government seeks to persuade a newspaper not to publish its classified secrets. And even if you think that's not likely to happen with this president and this attorney general, take a moment to consider who the next president and attorney general might well be. This prosecution could hand a loaded weapon to someone who views our free press as an enemy of the people. Let me close by speaking directly to the Attorney General, though I suspect he does not stream Democracy Now! Or The Intercept. Perhaps this footage or coverage of this footage will make its way to him. We know that this is a prosecution that you would not have initiated. We also know that you're an institutionalist and you don't believe that the government should change its position just because it changes its attorney general. And I think we know that you do not want to have the historic mark of being the first attorney general to set the precedent that publication of truthful information can land journalists and publishers in prison. Julian Assange has been in a maximum security prison for more than 4 years. Under any version of punishment, whatever you think he may have done wrong, enough is enough. And it's possible, indeed it's vital, that we find a way to bring this case to a resolution without setting a precedent that will make this country less free. Thank you.
Next up is Trevor Tim, co-founder and executive director of the Freedom of the Press Foundation, journalist, activist, legal analyst who previously worked for the Electronic Frontier Foundation. He's the author of Fighting for the Press, the inside story of the Pentagon Papers and other battles.
Many panelists have already eloquently spoken about the fact that what Julian Assange is accused of is not a rarity in journalism. It's, in fact, it's what journalists from mainstream papers, from the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, do almost daily, which is talk to sources about classified information, ask them for more information, and publish that information. In fact, it's written into their job responsibilities. But when you talk to defenders of the Justice Department or spokespeople for the Justice Department, they will often, they are unable to say unequivocally that this will not create a precedent that will allow them to go after those same journalists, but they will say, of course, we would never do that. And so I think it's important to emphasize that this is not just a slippery slope argument or some theoretical exercise. Currently, right now, on the campaign trail, the leading candidate for the Republican Party, Donald Trump, has repeatedly told crowds of thousands of people that he would like to, quote unquote, jail journalists. He has repeatedly on social media talked about how cable news operations are committing quote unquote treason for criticizing him and reporting on things that he doesn't like. And just the other day, one of his close allies talked about how in the second Donald Trump administration, he will quote unquote go after the media. And so, I would ask anybody within the Justice Department currently, in the Democratic Party, or in charge of the White House, is there anybody who would love more a precedent set in this Assange case that would allow a future president to go after newspapers like the New York Times and the Washington Post than Donald Trump? After all, it's not WikiLeaks or a WikiLeaks-like outfit that is publishing the most classified information in the United States today. It is those papers that I just named and many other mainstream papers like them.
Last but not least, before we conclude our tribunal today, Our witness is Rebecca Vincent, the director of campaigns for Reporters Without Borders, RSF, Reporters Sans Frontières, an international organization focused on safeguarding the right to freedom of information across the world. I very much appreciated when they came to my defense when charges were brought against me for covering the Dakota Access Pipeline in North Dakota. RSF was there. Rebecca Vincent began her career at the State Department before leaving to dedicate her career to the defense of human rights and free press. She's a fellow at the Royal Society of Arts and serves on the advisory network of the Media Freedom Coalition, the Magnitsky Awards Committee, and the Advisory Council of the Foreign Policy Center.
Thank you, Amy and Ryan, and also to Progressive International for bringing us all here together today. It's a pleasure to be here on behalf of Reporters Without Borders, known internationally as Reporters Sans Frontières. So if I say RSF, it's because of our French acronym. At RSF, we defend Julian Assange because of his contributions to journalism. The publication by WikiLeaks in 2010 of the leaked diplomatic and military documents informed extensive public interest reporting around the world, including by The New York Times, The Guardian, Le Monde, El País, and Der Spiegel, of course, the five original media partners of WikiLeaks who worked together to treat the leaked materials journalistically, but also reporting by hundreds of other media outlets around the world over the years. The publication of these materials exposed information in the public interest, including war crimes and human rights violations that to this day have never been prosecuted. Only the publisher is being pursued. If the U.S. government succeeds in its efforts to secure Julian Assange's extradition to the United States and bring him to trial here, he will be the first publisher prosecuted under the Espionage Act. This outdated law has itself become the focus of growing calls for reform, in part because it lacks a public interest defense. This means that no publisher, journalist, or journalistic source accused in this way could defend their actions as serving the public interest. Although the U.S. government puts much emphasis on other accusations against Assange, it is important to note that the bulk of this case is based on Espionage Act charges, 17 of the 18 counts against Julian Assange. Prosecuting him on these charges would set an alarming precedent that could change the very future of journalism, as it would pave the way for similar prosecutions of journalists and media organizations around the world. These charges should be immediately dropped, and the Espionage Act should be reformed to ensure such a case can never be brought again. As part of our global campaign for the release of Julian Assange, RSF has monitored the full extradition proceedings in London courts, which commenced in February 2020. Gaining access to these hearings was not easy, and we were the only NGO that fought our way into court to monitor every stage of this process. During the first instance proceedings in particular, we faced an extensive and evolving set of barriers to observation that violate the principles of open justice and the right to a fair trial. I want to emphasize that my colleagues and I have never experienced such difficulty monitoring any other court case in any country, even during the pandemic. We persevered because it was so important to bear witness to this historically important case, and in court, what we observed was disturbing. During the first instance proceedings, Julian Assange was held in a glass cage at the back of the courtroom, where at times it was clear he had trouble following proceedings and could not easily consult with his legal representation. Even more disturbing is the fact that Assange has not been allowed to attend court in person ever since. The last time he was seen outside of Belmarsh Prison was during a bail hearing at Westminster Magistrates Court on January 6, 2021, nearly 3 years ago. He is now only permitted to join court hearings via a video link from prison, and at times he has looked very unwell in doing so. Alarmingly, we learned that he suffered a mini stroke in prison during the appellate hearing in his case in October 2021. This is an important reminder of his state of mental health and physical health, which remain at great risk, which is exacerbated the longer he is in detention and would be brought into even more dire risk in conditions of extradition. So when we say that the possible that the extradition of Julian Assange is a possible matter of life or death, that really cannot be ignored. Fast forwarding to today, we await news of Day X, the final UK court hearing that represents the last possible stage in domestic proceedings, bringing Julian Assange dangerously close to extradition. If there's any glimmer of hope, it perhaps lies with the ongoing diplomatic negotiations between the US and Australian governments over Assange's fate. We again urge both governments to commit to reaching a political solution as a matter of urgent priority that would allow for Assange's release without further delay and prevent his extradition, with a guarantee of no further time to be served in prison in the UK, the US, Australia, or anywhere. The past 13 years cannot be undone, but these states can correct the situation now and put an end to the relentless persecution of Julian Assange, which endangers journalism and global press freedom. It's more crucial now than ever before to unite in our global call to free Assange and to stand up for the principles at stake.
That was Rebecca Vincent, director of campaigns at Reporters Without Borders, testifying at the Belmarsh Tribunal in early December in D.C. The High Court of Justice in London will hear what may be Julian Assange's final appeal on February 20th and 21st. We end today's show with the words of the famed Pentagon Papers whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg. He died at the age of 92 in June. He was one of Julian Assange's most vocal supporters. In 2019, he appeared on Democracy Now! A day after the Justice Department indicted Assange on 17 counts of violating the Espionage Act.
Yesterday is a day that will be live in the history of journalism, of law in this country, and of civil liberties in this country, because it was a direct attack on the First Amendment, an unprecedented one. There hasn't actually been such a significant attack on the freedom of the press, the First Amendment, which is the bedrock of our republic, really, our form of government, since my case in 1971, 48 years ago. But this is, I was indicted as a source, and I warned newsmen then that that would not be the last indictment of a source if I were convicted. But my warning really was that it wasn't going to stop there. Almost inevitably, there would be a stronger attack directly on the foundations of journalism, against editors, publishers, and journalists themselves. And we've now seen that as of yesterday. That's a new front in President Trump's war on the free press, which he regards as the enemy of the people. They started out with a charge that made Julian look something other than a normal journalist. The help to hacking a password sounded like something that even in the digital age, perhaps most journalists wouldn't do, and that would hope to separate him from the support of other journalists. In this case, when they had to lay out their larger charge, this is straight journalism. They mentioned, for instance, that he solicited investigative material. He solicited classified information terribly. He didn't just passively receive it over the transom. I can't count the number of times I've been solicited for classified information, starting with the Pentagon Papers, but long after that, and that's by every member of the responsible press that I dealt with, the Times, the Post, AP, you name it. That's journalism.
Famed Pentagon Papers whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg. He died in June at the age of 92. He testified at the first Belmarsh Tribunal at the National Press Club last January. To see the full video of both Belmarsh Tribunals, visit democracynow.org. And that does it for today's show. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Teresena, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, and Sanji Lopez. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera, Hugh Grand, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, Dennis McCormick, Matt Ely, Emily Anderson, and Buffy St. Marie Hernandez. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
For 40 years, the Simon Fraser Public Interest Research Group, a.k.a. SFPIRG, has been helping students build communities at SFU. Campus organizations like Out on Campus and Embark developed out-of action groups at SFPIRG. Action groups are one of the ways that student activists can take action for change. Visit us at www.sfpirg.ca. That's www.sfpirg.ca to learn more about starting your own action group today.
The staff and volunteers